The game is over. Your Bucks postgame show starts now. Welcome to Bucks Talk. Insight, analysis, and your chance to sound off on the game you just heard. Now to break it all down, here's your host, Justin Garcia.
Well, I think we all hope it'll be at least 10 months before the Bucks see the Indiana Pacers once more as the Pacers... Look, they not only take the season series, winning four of the five regular season matchups, they dominated the Bucks throughout the course of this season series. You saw a lot of swagger from that young Pacers team, and rightfully so. A game, look, the first matchup, you didn't have Damian Lillard, fine. But the Pacers led that game by as many as 18 points. They allowed that lead to slip away, but made a statement with their victory nonetheless. Then you have the semifinal matchup where they basically dominated the Bucks. Again, for most of that game, they come to Milwaukee, do the same thing on New Year's Day. They bounce back from a so-so first half, similar to what we saw tonight, and dominate the second half two times in a span of three games. This is just not a good matchup for the Bucks, and there is a chance you could play them in the postseason. The Bucks should hope that is not the case. The roster clearly has a chance to look different when the postseason begins for both of these teams. But the way the Pacers are constructed, as crazy as it is to suggest, you could make an argument the Pacers are a worse matchup for the Bucks than even the Boston Celtics with how perimeter heavy their team is. Yes, you have Miles Turner. He's a big man that sits out on the perimeter and can knock down threes. It is all perimeter-based. It starts with Tyrese Halliburton as the head of the snake, and we saw routinely once again tonight, up and down the floor, the challenges that he presented for this Bucks defense. They had no answers for Tyrese Halliburton, and when he gets going downhill, another game with zero turnovers, the way he moves the ball and gets everybody involved, that was one of the bigger differences you saw tonight versus Monday night. Pacers were hitting threes, and when that happens... They're as close to unstoppable offensively as there is in the NBA. 855-616-1620 is the number to join us tonight on the Talk and Text line, the old National Bank Talk and Text line. An embarrassing loss for the Bucks, who we thought would come with a much better response than we saw after that performance on New Year's Day. It's not necessarily back to the drawing board, but you're getting pretty close to it with the way this defense has looked for about 10 days now. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We'll get to your thoughts on tonight's performance on the five games against the Indiana Pacers this season as well. And I do want to talk about a couple of areas with this defense because, to me, it really boils down to two things that we're seeing from the Bucks, where they are failing to execute. It's all weaving together with this defense. We'll get into those numbers and hear from you after this on Bucks Talk. .142-130, the final score from Indianapolis. The Pacers dominate the Bucks tonight, a game where the Indiana Pacers put up 64 points in the paint, and the Bucks are giving up just about 55 points per game in the paint. That right now is tied with the Pistons for 25th in the league. So I talked about this a little bit earlier today elsewhere, but to me a couple of things stand out when we talk about this Bucks defense and how we have seen growth overall, but it's been more of a two steps forward, one step backward type of growth, opposed to the consistent climb up the hill. And to me, it really boils down to a couple of areas. The points in the paint is a big one. And I think points in the paint and rebounding struggles are kind of attached at the hip, and it boils down to perimeter defense. So I mentioned the Bucks are giving up nearly 55 points per game in the paint so far this season. The company and the neighborhood that they're in right now, it is not the company you want to keep. Tied for 25th with the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons have been the worst team in basketball this season. The other teams in that neighborhood, the Charlotte Hornets, the Toronto Raptors, San Antonio Spurs have been better than the Bucks. Not a whole lot of size outside of Victor Wembanyama, but they've been better at protecting the paint than the Bucks have. The only teams worse, the Atlanta Hawks, who rumors are circulating, they may already be thinking about blowing things up. The Portland Trailblazers, who approached this season knowing we're not going to be good. We're playing for next year. We're starting to rebuild here. Traded Damian Lillard, brought in Scoot Henderson. We're playing our young guys. The Washington Wizards, who are in that same boat as the Portland Trailblazers. They've been one of the worst teams in the league. If it weren't for the Detroit Pistons, the Wizards would be the worst team in the Eastern Conference. They did the same thing, getting rid of Bradley Beal in the offseason and playing for the future. And then there's this Indiana Pacers team who is finding success very similar to the Bucks by outscoring their opponent. Now, we mentioned we've seen some subtle strides defensively from the Bucks. You haven't seen that from the Pacers, right? The defense has been pretty consistent from day one to where it is now. And they recognize that. They know we're just going to have to outscore teams to beat them. But they have been doing that. And again, Tyrese Haliburton is a big reason behind that. I mentioned this on the network. This was sixth time this season that Tyrese Haliburton had 20 or more points. 10 or more assists, and zero turnovers. He had two against the Bucks on New Year's Day. In the two games prior to that, he had a total of 43 assists and two turnovers. Back-to-back 2020 games. He has been incredible, and it's very similar to Damian Lillard, where he can score from all three levels, but that third level, it's basically four levels. He can knock down threes. He can get into the mid-range. He can finish at the rim. But for Tyrese Haliburton, we've seen those deep threes, too, those Damian Lillard logo threes. And they run that Spain pick and roll. Maybe better than any team in the league. They put pressure on the defense with the shooters they surround Tyrese Haliburton with, and he has been arguably the best decision maker in the NBA so far this season. But back to the Bucks, here's what it boils down to. The points in the paint has simply been way too much. If we go back, and I'll preface with this, this is not a comparison of coaching staffs. This is not to point out one coach is better than the other, or the Bucks are a better team with this coach than they were with that coach. But if we go back to 2018, 2019, the first season that Mike Budenholzer arrived in Milwaukee, Mike Budenholzer was very effective, and a lot of times you can misconstrue this and read this as a backhanded compliment, which I do not intend it to be. He was very effective at grabbing that low-hanging fruit and finding the areas where you can improve your team and get them better immediately and raise the floor for your team. We saw the ceiling go up as well, obviously, with the team winning a championship. But Mike Budenholzer did a good job of getting the low-hanging fruit and raising the floor for this team. One of those areas was how this team defended. You think about where they were under Jason Kidd in the last few months under Joe Prunty. It was not the established group and the locked-in, in-sync group that it became for 5 years under Bud. The addition of Brook Lopez, that had a lot to do with it. Drew Holiday had even more to do with it. Even Eric Bledsoe those first 2 years. And the way that Eric Bledsoe, similar to what we talked about with Drew Holiday, could navigate screens and defend out there. You built a defense that funneled wing players into Brook Lopez and also into Giannis as one of the better help defenders in the league to protect that paint. The first year in Milwaukee, under Mike Budenholzer, the Bucks allowed just over 41 points per game in the paint to their opponents. That was tops in the NBA. In year number two, the 2019-2020 season, when the Bucks at one point were on pace to win 70-plus games, they allowed less than 38 points per game in the paint. First in the league by a wide margin. in the 2020-2021 season, when the Bucks would ultimately win the NBA championship, they allowed just over 42 points per game in the paint. That was second best in the league. The 2021-22 season, it was 42 points per game in the paint. Third best in the league, behind only the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. And then last year, they slid down to 12th. 49 points per game in the paint. Part of that was the shift that the Bucks were getting out on the perimeter more, contesting threes, helping out there more. You got to give up something to get something. And they said, okay, we can give up some of this rim protection. Or I shouldn't say rim protection. We can give up some of that paint scoring to get better on the perimeter. They still did a very, very good job defending the rim. Points in the paint does not necessarily mean shots at the rim. It doesn't mean dunks and layups. It can be mid-range shots within the free throw line, anywhere in that area. That's what points in the paints are. Paint are. The Bucks for 5 years were very, very good at that. First, second, third, and 12th under Bud. I mentioned this year, that has not been the case. It is coming into play tonight, 54-plus points per game, close to 55, 25th in the league. You jump from 12th to 25th. You jumped from being routinely in the top three, and I would suppose the average under those 5 years would probably check in somewhere around third or fourth. You went from that to 25th, to not only the bottom 10, bottom half, bottom five in the league is where this team has been. And to me, it's a couple of areas. It starts with rebounding, because that's another area that the Bucks for the last 5 years have been very, very good at. Defensive rebounding, especially. The Bucks in overall rebounding rate and defensive rebounding rate were tops or in the top five in both of those categories for each of the last 5 years. In other words, there's X amount of rebounds in a game. What percentage do you get? If you're above the low 50s, you're pretty good. On the defensive end, if you're in the high 70s, if you're close to 80, you're very good at that. That's where the Bucks lived. That has not been the case this season. They have given up a lot of offensive rebounds to the opponents. And to me, those two are tied together, because the Bucks have been killed recently, not only in points in the paint, but second chance and putbacks. And we heard after that loss to the Pacers on Monday, we heard again today before the game against the Pacers tonight. We heard after game one against the Knicks. We heard after the Christmas Day loss to the Knicks. We've heard this kind of pounded by Adrian Griffin a few times already this season. When you face these teams, especially teams like the Indiana Pacers, with a point guard, a distributor, a facilitator like Tyrese Haliburton, who has the ability to score on multiple levels, who has the ability to get his teammates involved, who are very dangerous as a team offensively, you have to limit their amount of chances. You cannot give them second chances. And that's what the Bucks have done for most of this season. Right now, I mentioned the Bucks had kind of lived in the top five for rebounding rates. Bucks have a 71% defensive rebounding rate right now. That is 18th best in the NBA. And they're at a 50% rebounding rate. In other words, it's a 50-50 chance if the Bucks are going to get the rebound. That is also 18th. These are areas the Bucks have been in the top five or first for the last 5 years. And when you're giving up those offensive rebounds, in other words, if you're not getting a high volume of defensive rebounds, that leaves a lot of offensive rebounds for your opponent. Bucks are not getting offensive rebounds either, but that's an entirely separate conversation. But if you're giving up those offensive rebounds, a lot of time, that's where that points in the paint is going to come from. And what we've seen through 34 games this season, the points in the paint that the Bucks are yielding to their opponents seem to be coming from two key areas. Number one, those second chance points, those reloads, as John McLaughlin would put it for all those years. They're giving up offensive rebounds to the opponent, and the opponent is scoring on those putbacks. But perhaps the biggest problem is blowbys and containing at the point of attack on the perimeter. That has been a huge issue for the Bucks this season. It all ties together. Opponents are getting into the paint and scoring with ease. Brook Lopez still leads the league in contested shots per game. The number is lower this year than it was a season ago. But I think there's a couple of things that come from that, or reasons why. Last year and the last few years, that's what the defense was designed to do. Jrue Holiday meets you at the point of attack. He funnels you into Brook Lopez, or into Giannis if he's on the floor, or Giannis comes over to help Brook Lopez. But Jrue Holiday navigates that screen game. He funnels you into the Bucks big man, into Brook Lopez, and Brook Lopez contests that shot. There were a lot of contests for Brook Lopez by design a season ago. Not all of them have been by design this year. And I think the reason why, on average per game, it has been lower than it was a season ago and the last few years, for that matter, is Brook Lopez hasn't been there to contest a lot of these shots at the rim. It has been blow-bys. It's been breakdowns on the perimeter where the opponent is getting into the paint with ease and scoring at the rim on uncontested looks. This team can score with the best of them, although, ironically enough, not against the Indiana Pacers for whatever reason it is. But until you clean up some of those things and until you start to grab some of that low-hanging fruit, you've already seen some of the conversations of national media saying, well, the Bucks are not a serious contender because of this defense. And I think we all kind of poo-pooed that and said, well, the defense is getting better. And it is. Or it has. Maybe it's plateaued in these last couple of games. But there are some major red flags that need to be cleaned up in these next 2 months for this team to be taken seriously as a contender. You cannot win one-dimensional basketball. We talked about this a week or so ago and said, look, here's the blueprint. Here's why the Bucks made this change to bring in Damian Lillard versus Jrue Holiday. They recognized you got to be able to score in the postseason. For as much as we talk about defense and defense wins championships, you got to be able to score, and you got to be able to do that in the half court. And the Bucks could not do that for the last 5 years. They won a championship in spite of a horrifically bad half court offense. They had a very, very good defense, one of the best we had seen in probably 15 years in the postseason. You think about the Bucks the year they won the title. You think about the Raptors the year they beat the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. Those two teams in recent memory, those were two of the better playoff defenses we had seen. But you can't have a bad unit. You can't have an elite offense and a terrible defense and vice versa. You have to be very good at one and okay, just better than league average at the other. And we've seen enough red flags pop up to make you question, as much as we've seen this defense get better, do we think this defense can sit at this level and remain league average? We've had a lot of talk about Jay Crowder and this team not being 100% and what Jay Crowder means for the team. And he will help you there. Right? I do think it's fair to point out, yeah, well, Jay Crowder will help you out in some of these areas. Jay Crowder is not going to fix everything. And it starts with how you defend on the perimeter, because look at other teams in the league. Look at how the best teams are constructed. You are going to have to contend with dynamic perimeter scorers, not just in the semifinals, not just in the conference finals, should you get there. And look, we can't even say semifinals for certain either. The Bucks lost in the first round as a one seed a season ago, but up and down, you are going to face dynamic scorers on the perimeter that you are going to need to have an answer for and contain, and cannot allow what we have seen especially start to bubble up for this last week or so. 855-616-1620 is the Old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head to the phone lines and check in with Dick in Port Washington. Dick, what do you think about what we've seen from this team recently?
Well, it's what do we got, a third of the season in?
Almost, we're getting close to half.
Yeah, okay. It's 82 games. But with that said, I think we've met the enemy and he is us. Just a couple of observations. The bench has been horrible lately. Connaughton, I don't know what's happened to him. Bobby is more interested in arguing than playing. I'm really coming around to the thought that with the change in players, Holiday for, you know, we got Dame. I just wonder what a seasoned coach would do with this group. Platitudes. I mean, it's frustrating to listen to our coach personally. It's a rudderless ship. And tonight, the reason we lost is Indiana wanted it. Giannis is putting arms around guys. There was no fire tonight. And I think we keep waiting to hear or see, I should say, about the Dame Giannis combination. You know, I think maybe Father Time has caught up with Damian Lillard. He's had some good games, but the chemistry is just isn't there. And that leads me back to coaching. You know, as crazy as it seems, I've got a feeling we're going to lose tomorrow night. And if we do, then the ship is taking on water big time. I just don't have answers for the points I brought up that things are going to change. The defense has improved, I guess, but I just don't get it. How you can have a third quarter like we had and no adjustments made? He's not playing Lillard enough. I mean, I don't get it. I'm just real frustrated, and I thought we'd do a lot better. I still think our talent is as good, if not better, than Boston's, especially with our bench, except for what I just said, the bench is basically was non-existent these last couple of games. I'm getting very close to a tipping point on this team. And I don't know, what do you think?
I think it's pretty clear you need to address the perimeter. I think the other thing to point out is this defense that Adrian Griffin brought to Milwaukee or envisioned running in Milwaukee is predicated on being aggressive and creating turnovers, putting pressure on the ball. The Bucks have not been very good at forcing turnovers this season. Now, when you look at the four factors that any analytics nerd will point out is this is what you use to determine success. The Bucks have been very good in three of those four areas this season. Defensively, they have not. The one area, so you look at effective field goal percentage, you look at your turnover rate, you look at your free throw rate, you look at your offensive rebounding rate. Bucks have been one of the best teams in their effective field goal percentage. They've been very good at getting to the free throw line with Giannis and Damian Lillard. They have not turned the ball over all that much, contrary to popular belief, a narrative that's out there about individual players. They've been pretty good at limiting the percentage of possessions that end in a turnover. They have not gotten to the offensive glass. And on the defensive side, you look at those same factors, it's a pretty similar story. They have been atrocious on opponent offensive rebounding rate. They have been very bad in turnover rate. In other words, you wanted to bring this aggressive defense and force turnovers and create transition that way. They haven't done it. And if you're going to play that type of style and overly aggressive and it's not creating turnovers, it's going to lead to breakdowns elsewhere. And as we just ran through moments ago, those breakdowns are coming around the paint and at the rim. And Brooke Lopez is being asked to do a lot. And I think you saw tonight, Brooke Lopez is great at protecting the rim. And when you have a defense that's predicated around that, but this defense is just seemingly half this, half that. And I think the one thing, out of fairness to Adrian Griffin, that we do have to point out is up until, a week before training camp began, this defense that he wanted to run, he envisioned doing that with Drew Holiday on the team. And he's not here. And and what he wants to do looks a lot better when he got Drew in the backcourt.
Yeah. That leads me to my point that I realize they didn't know they're going to get Lillard. But the bottom line is we've got this guy now, and I don't think he knows how to deal with this. It's so different when you got two superstars like those guys. I just don't think he doesn't have enough experience to know how to work with those two guys. And aggressiveness is fine, but Beasley's been picking up fouls so much that he's on the bench more than he's on the court, and we don't have anybody else to put in. There's too much air leaking from these tires to complete the race at this point. There's talk about bringing back Tucker and then, but I think his tank is empty. And I will say this, it does seem to me, and I guess let me make two points here. It does seem to me that the teams we play become very good shooters from the three-point line when we're playing them. But is that because our defense is bad on them? They had a statistic on the game tonight, the one small guard from Indiana.
Yeah, T.J. McConnell basically doubles his career average against the Bucks versus every other team.
Yeah. Now, why does that occur? I don't get it.
Well, in fairness, that includes the Drew Holiday era, too. It's not just this year that T.J. McConnell has done that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, another thing, too, you hear people saying we shouldn't have traded Drew Holiday. Well, I've been watching their box scores great. And I guess I'm not asking him to score there, but it's rare. He's above 10 points a game. I don't know what his average is for the year, but, I still go back to this, He didn't stop Butler last year, did he? I think we're giving him too much credit for the defense he played. I was more concerned, really, about his lack of offense when you look back on it.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Thanks for the call, Dick. And it does sound like if the Bucks lose tomorrow, full-on panic from Dick if we do see the Bucks drop game number two against the Spurs. As for that Drew Holiday point, look, we got a few more calls I will get to coming up after the break here, but I do want to just put this out there. What he's being asked to do offensively is much different than what you asked of him in Milwaukee, and we knew that coming in. You've got Jason Tatum. You've got Jaylen Brown. Kristaps Porzingis has been the second-best player on the Celtics this season. Derek White has outplayed Drew Holiday, but he's averaging less than 13 points per game. That is his lowest scoring average since his rookie season. In 2009-2010. Now, his field goal attempts, his minutes have remained consistent. But his field goal attempts per game have dropped significantly.
But is that his role in Boston?
No, and that's the point. But his efficiency, slightly lower than it's been in recent years. But again, it's the same conversation that I think Dick was bringing up about Damian Lillard. When you look at the age, they are the exact same age. Only a month separates the two. And sooner or later, you see that drop-off. So if you're going to say that for Drew Holiday, as a lot of Bucks fans said, well, we're going to see that regression coming, you have to be ready for that from Damian Lillard as well. I'm not saying that's what we've seen from Dame this season, but especially against the Indiana Pacers, those numbers have not been pretty. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Justin in North Carolina, we'll get to you after the break. Some other numbers to throw your way that do not paint a pretty picture about what we've seen from this Bucks defense this season. We'll get into it after this on Bucks Talk. .142-130, the final score in Indianapolis. The Pacers take down the Bucks once more, and they take 4 of 5 regular season matchups in this series. 855-616-1620 is the Old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Old National Bank, get old. Let's head back to the phone lines and check in with Justin in North Carolina. What do you make of this series against the Pacers, Justin?
Hey, first of all, man, shout out to my guy Dick in Port Washington. You got to chill out, man. Jordan Nwora got the game. Like we got to relax, man. I hate to be like Rodgers, but God, dog, man. Listen, Dr. Griffin is not a problem. Damian Lillard is not a problem. These guys are learning each other. Like, as Bucks fans, we got to understand, right? This isn't, rest in peace, Herb Cole's Bucks. The regular season is not super important to us. I had to check myself a couple times tonight, Justin, because on Twitter going back and forth with these Pacers fans who I just realized something. This was their NBA championship tonight. This was their Super Bowl. Like, we got to put everything in a proper perspective. All this stuff is gearing us up for April and May. Now, one of your former colleagues, I won't mention his name, he made a tweet talking about Jrue Holiday is a better basketball player than Dame Lillard. I don't think so. I know we lost some stuff defensively. I know we're learning on the defensive end right now. This entire season is a body of learning to build us for the parade in June. I have the utmost faith in Griffin. I don't think it's a coach. I don't think it's anything wrong with him at all. I think he's putting guys in position to play. And right now, we're not making shots. You don't make shots, you can't win. Haliburton and those Pacers, everything they threw up at the rim at some point during that third quarter went in. They shot 70%, correct me if I'm wrong, in the third quarter.
Yep.
You won't get that ticky-tack whistle they got during this game in the playoffs. You won't get this same Giannis during the playoffs. You won't get this same Dame. Like, all Bucks fans, we got to relax. We're the best team in the NBA. And I'm not just saying that because I'm biased, Justin. I really believe that.
I'm assuming, because it's a negative connotation, I'm assuming I know who it is you're referring to as the former colleague. Mm-hmm. You know, look, it's more to it, as you pointed out. It's more to it than just changing out Dame, Jrue Holiday for Dame, I should say. And I'll point to this, too. To me, it comes down to the defense on the perimeter. And you know what you're getting with Jrue Holiday. Nobody expected Jrue Holiday to come in here and be the defender that, or excuse me, Damian Lillard to come in here and be the defender that Jrue Holiday was. To me, it boils down to who's playing next to him. And I think Malik Beasley has done everything you've asked of him this season. But I know numbers will point to that five-man group for the Bucks starters. By the numbers, it's been one of the best five-man lineups in the league this season. But as you continue to see instances like this, and as we continue to talk about, you know, what Dick brought up about the bench, too, that we've seen Bobby Portis put together smaller segments of very effective play that's kind of been bookended by less effective segments. When he's not scoring, when Pat Connaughton isn't hitting shots, you have two other big pieces, our young players, in Marjan Beauchamp and Andre Jackson Jr., that realistically, you can't expect those guys to be major contributors for a team that wants to win a championship in the postseason at this point in their career, especially Andre Jackson Jr., that it boils down to you need more from the bench, right? And it's Jay Crowder will help you there. He's not going to solve everything. And that's where more of the conversation of, does it make more sense for Malik Beasley to be a scorer that comes off the bench when, sure, he gets more open looks when he's on the floor with Giannis and Damian Lillard, but he also gets less shots in those moments? And does it make sense to have him kind of help juice your bench scoring and also get more of a defensive-minded two-guard out there to help offset some of the size issues and everything else that Damian Lillard is going to bring on the defensive end?
So I agree with you with that. I think that Jay Crowder coming back completely changes his team. Putting Beasley off the bench will allow Beasley just to cook, and that's what we need with Beasley and Portis on there, because Portis still is going to demand that double down low when he puts a guy on the block. We're going to be okay, man. I don't think P.J. Tucker is the answer. If we get him on the buyout, great. Having to give up any assets for him, I don't want to do it, and I love P.J. I live in Raleigh where P.J.'s from, so I would love to have P.J. come back again, but it has to be right. So there was another tweet that came across social media today, across the Twitter, formerly known as X, or whatever, X formerly known as Twitter. And I want to get your take on this, and then I'll let you go, Justin. So the tweet read that this Pacers team is a lot of like that Bucks with Giannis and Jabari team, how they were Thorne and LeBron side in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And I think we would kind of take it to those guys during the regular season, but when the playoffs came, we didn't really want any smoke with that type of team. So I think it's the same type of thing, man. We're going to be okay. When does Crowder come back, man? And then I'll let you go, man. I'll listen off the air, man. I appreciate it. Keep up the good work, my guy.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Justin. No concrete timetable on Jay Crowder. It's still probably about 2 weeks away. The last step that we got from Adrian Griffin, he's progressing well, but they didn't set a date just yet. I want to say that was around the 20th of November that news came for Jay Crowder, and we thought it was a 6 to 8 week timeline for him. So we're probably about 2 weeks away, maybe three to be safe. And especially, you know, the fact for veterans, especially, and as we've seen the importance and the way that Jay Crowder started this season as well, you're going to take your time with him. And it's going to be a slow process to kind of go through the onboarding and get him back out there on the floor and increase those minutes. So it's probably more realistic to look at it of Jay Crowder fully back, probably 3 weeks to a month from now, back on the floor. Maybe it's 2 to 3 weeks for him. But yeah, the last game that Jay Crowder played in was November 11th. So by that mark, we would be 1 week away from that 2 month timeline, but a couple of weeks for Jay Crowder to make his return. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank Talk and Text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head back to the phone lines, talk with Dan in Milwaukee. You're up next.
Hey there. I think that the thing that people need to be reminded about, that Adrian Griffin is not ours to hire and fire. Ultimately, Giannis is the one that made the decision to hire him. And if we want Giannis to stay in Milwaukee, we need him to have the understanding that those really are his choices to make. And we trust in Giannis. So ultimately, we may not like all the decisions that Adrian Griffin is making, but he gets a free pass.
Well, thanks for the call, Dan. I don't know if it's a free pass. Look, Adrian Griffin is not in danger of being fired this season. Giannis had some sway on that, sure. Giannis has input that you would expect he would have. But look, I think the bigger thing to keep in mind here is Adrian Griffin's a first-year head coach. And it's just no matter how much experience you have as an assistant coach, it is different the first time that you're wearing the whistle and you're making those calls and he's learning, he's growing. I come back to, again, it was a week before training camp. He had this vision for how he wanted to play defensively that centered around having Drew Holiday. He had to change on the fly, and he's going to have to continue to change on the fly because, again, it's all those numbers we pointed to. The personnel that you have right now, it does not fit for this style that you envisioned playing. So that's where that coaching comes in and making those adjustments within games, game to game. We've seen in-game adjustments from Adrian Griffin. We've seen different looks. We've seen the Bucks play zone at times. We've seen them play man-to-man. We've seen them switch things up, switch up their coverages. You'll hear from Griff quite a bit. And that's going to be the big thing for this group is to continue to do those types of things as we get to the second half of the season. We're not that far away. 34 games, you're closer to halfway through than you are a third of the way through the season. The league as a whole has completed 39% of games played this season. So we're getting very close to that midpoint of the season where we all kind of said, look, there is no magic number to say once you hit X amount of games, this team is going to be better and that chemistry will fully be developed and they'll start to turn the corner and it'll remind you of 2021. I pointed out 2021, it wasn't until really the final game before the All-Star break. That was, I think, 35 games or so, and that was a 72-game regular season. Maybe it's going to be longer, but as much as you continue to see that growth offensively, we haven't talked about that much either. There's one area specifically we saw a couple of times tonight, and I do really wonder if this one area on the offensive side is where the Bucks are most primed for growth in these coming games and weeks as Trevor Gleason gets more experience with this team, the newest assistant on the staff. And that's, we saw a couple of times, Brook Lopez was the guy the Bucks chose to go to take advantage of a mismatch in size that he had. That's what Trevor Gleason brought to the Raptors. It was a movement offense, and you found and exploited mismatches. Now, it's easier said than done to do that. I know a lot of fans have said, well, why don't the Bucks ever do that? Why don't you target the poor defensive players? You never did it under Bud. We haven't seen a ton of it this season. But look, it's also a little different to do that, running the system the Raptors had versus a team that has Giannis and Damian Lillard. But offensively, not just the continued chemistry that's growing between Giannis and Dame, though those pick and rolls and those two-man actions decreased in the month of December versus November, it's not just that. It's do the Bucks start to exploit some mismatches? But defensively, there's a lot of room for growth. Jay Crowder's going to help some, but Jay Crowder's not going to solve the overall puzzle for this Bucks team. Some more of those rebounding numbers that I mentioned just vaguely and where the Bucks had performed in the previous 5 years, where they currently sit now, both offensive and defensive rebounding. A lot of that has led, especially on the defensive glass, to points in the paint. That, in turn, has led to more points overall and that defensive rating that we've seen for this Bucks team. 855-616-1620. More of your thoughts as the Bucks drop another one to the Indiana Pacers. We'll get into some more numbers after this on Bucks Talk. .142 to .130, the final from Indianapolis. Pacers win for the fourth time in five games against the Bucks. They already clinched the season series with that win on New Year's Day, and here they just add some more salt to the wounds for this Bucks team. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head back to the phone lines and start with Paul on the east side.
Hey, Justin, thanks for taking my call. Longtime Bucks fan and listener, first-time caller. Thanks for your excellent analysis on what's ailing the Bucks at the moment. And I think the underlying problem is Adrian Griffin. He's a first-time coach when he was hired. I, and I'm sure a lot of Bucks fans, are very concerned hiring an assistant. We have a very short window here, and we're squandering it now. We have to stop making excuses for the guy that, yeah, we traded Holiday 1 week before the season, but he's had almost a half of a season to adjust. And I don't see any difference on the court in the defenses. He just keeps saying after the game, yeah, we got to get better, we got to get better, but nothing changes. And I think he's overmatched. He's going to cost the Bucks a year with talent that's getting older. I wish we would follow the Ron Wolf philosophy, is when you make a mistake, correct that mistake sooner than later. And I'm sure he won't be fired, but part of me wishes he would, so we could start over before the playoffs start, because right now we are not a championship team. The way we're playing, we may not even get out of the first round again. And it's a shame. We got Damian and Giannis and all these other players. But, man, we are in a bad way right now. That's my view.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Paul. I would say this. Up until, what, a week ago? Up until the 20 Christmas Day, we were having the discussion over the growth that you'd seen defensively. Now, I will add the caveat. I recognize the Bucks have not played a challenging schedule so far. The Bucks and Sixers have played a very, very similar schedule. And it does not pick up for at least another month and a half for the Bucks. It's really March that things start to come to a head in terms of the difficulty they have in scheduling. January is a very, very prime opportunity for the Bucks. The Boston Celtics play, I believe, the most difficult schedule in the league this month. They have four back-to-backs. The Bucks have three. The level of opponents on the schedule for the Celtics, we already saw them lose last night to the Oklahoma City Thunder. They've got some tough matchups. The opponent win percentage, I want to say, is close to 60% for the Celtics in January. It's below 50% for the Bucks. You got a lot of Central Division matchups. You had these two games. I know they're not below 500. But you have these two games with the Pacers. You have a two-game series with the Pistons. You have a two-game series with the Cavaliers. So you have an opportunity to gain some ground on the Celtics and more importantly, keep the pace with the Celtics and the Philadelphia 76ers, because it's going to get challenging once you get to March. And it's important not to start to lose the rope in January and February, because if that happens and if this team doesn't start to gel and come together in enough time, look, as we've grown accustomed to seeing this Bucks team finish 1-3, if that happens, there's a very, very significant chance you could be, even without home court, in the first round of a playoff series. You could be a 5 seed. That is not inconceivable at this point. I get that there's a lot of consternation over Adrian Griffin. And look, I still think we don't know either way. And you never know with a first-year coach. As much as people want to say, well, yeah, you know early. It's just not true. You go back to Boston, I think the last time you really knew was midway through the season with Ime Udoka, where you knew, yeah, this guy is really good. And we've seen it again this year with the Houston Rockets. But you need time with coaches. It doesn't matter how experienced you are. Look at the number of guys to Frank Vogel, up and down career that he had.
With L.A., Rick Carlisle in Indy.
Nobody thought Frank Vogel was one of the best coaches in the league early. Nobody thought he was bad. Wins a title with the Lakers. Rick Carlisle, the point that you made too. Same thing, where it takes time sometimes. Now, I understand you don't have a whole lot of time when you're talking about Damian Lillard at the advanced age that he's at. Not to say that he's geriatric, but he's in his mid-30s. Your window, not just with the age of your players, you all of a sudden have one of the oldest rosters in the league, I believe second oldest. Your window is closer to being closed than it is open. So you don't have a whole lot of time. It needs to start to come together quickly, but it's really the defense that needs to come together. The gamble that the Bucks made, as we've gone over quite a few times, is we recognize we got to be able to score in the postseason, and Damian Lillard is going to bring that. Now, if you just looked at this Pacers series, you would not think that's the case, because Damian Lillard struggled mightily in this series against the Pacers. He only played in 4 of the 5 games. We saw the way the Pacers attacked him defensively was, we're going to blitz him, we're going to pick him up full court, we're going to basically double him, and especially in those moments when he's on the floor alone, if Giannis isn't out there, if Chris Middleton isn't out there, we're especially going to trap him and make sure he gives up the ball, has to play two guard, and can't take over the game. And it's worked. In the 4 games that Dame has played against the Pacers this season, he did average 20 points, but shot 32% from the field, 27% on threes. You're going to need Damian Lillard to be the guy that you expected him to be in the playoffs for all of this to work, no matter how good or how bad the defense looks. But I keep coming back to points in the paint and rebounding, and those are the two things that you should take away from this show tonight. That's where it's imperative the Bucks need to take big strides going forward. Second best, year by year, the 5 years under Mike Budenholzer, the Bucks' defensive rebounding rate. Second, first, fourth, second, third. This year it's 18th. Overall rebounding rate, fifth, first, fifth, fifth, second. They were never outside the top 5 in either of those two categories. This year, they are 18th in defensive rebounding, 18th in total rebounding. Offensive rebounding has been similar. They're 24th this season. The best that they did under Bud was 13th. They were routinely in the bottom half of the league. But to me, the big thing is, if you're going to make one shift, I would put an emphasis on crashing the offensive glass at this point. We didn't see that under Bud because a lot of coaches, the fear of crashing the offensive glass is, we don't have anybody back in transition. We're leaving us prone and susceptible to giving up fast break, transition points. That's where teams can really get jump-started offensively. My counter would be, look, you've struggled with that as is. Maybe it's time to concede. We're not going to improve that offense. We're not going to improve that area. The way we can improve our defense is through our offense. And when you look at the efficiency the Bucks have had offensively, as one of the best units in the league, That's where we feel like we can really improve our defense, is if we get more possessions. We crash the offensive glass. We get those reloads, and we're getting more possessions. We're valuing possessions. As any analytics person will tell you, you should value your possessions. Especially if you're a good offense, you should want more possessions. So if you crash the offensive glass and try to increase your offensive rebounding, you're giving Giannis and Damian Lillard more chances to score the basketball, and you're also limiting the amount of times that the opponent has the ball. You're going to give up transition points, sure. But again, you're giving up a lot of points as is. So maybe it's time to put more of an emphasis on the offense. But defensive rebounding, that's the big one, is when you're playing on the perimeter and you're pressuring the perimeter, you're not by the basket. And I think the other big thing is Giannis has had to take on more perimeter assignments. You don't have Jrue Holiday. Giannis hasn't been that ultimate help defender where you can hide him in the corner, you can put him on one of the less effective offensive players because you had Jrue Holiday to take on whoever the top guy was. You had players like Wesley Matthews. And let's also point this out. For as much heat as Grayson Allen took, Grayson Allen was not a bad defensive player. The number one thing that went against Grayson Allen was his size. You could pick him apart in the playoffs. You could target him because he was smaller. And some of the guys you were asking him to defend, especially that Celtics series, he's going to struggle against Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. But when he has help, he can hold up. But because of that, when you look at Wesley Matthews gone, Grayson Allen, who was at least assignment sure, Jrue Holiday, all these hits, it has forced Giannis to change the way that he plays defensively as well. That's pulled him away from the basket. And I think especially early in the season, we were asking, well, why isn't Giannis rebounding as much as he was in the past? That's a big reason why. If you're not as close to the basket in the glass as he has been in years past. How many times as well have we seen Brook Lopez getting out there contesting shots? That opens things up. You have to be assignment sure. And Adrian Griffin has mentioned this a number of times. Me as a player, Adrian Griffin, the way that I stuck around in the league so long, the way I made an impact, I was assignment sure. I knew those things. I had to do the dirty work. I had to do the little things and the attention to detail, boxing out, getting to the ball. These are things we've seen the Bucks fall short on recently. But again, if you're playing on the perimeter, if Brook Lopez is contesting and pulled away from the basket then, you got to get back to the glass. Otherwise, it's opening the door for your opponent to get those offensive rebounds and score around the basket. And that's what we've seen far too much of this season from the Bucks. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. More of your thoughts after this as the show continues. For the fourth time in five regular season games, the Bucks come up on the short end of the stick against the Indiana Pacers, 142-130 tonight. A lot to get into on the defensive end as we've gotten through most of that so far tonight, and still some time to hear from you as well. 855-616-1620 is the old National Bank talk and text line. Let's head back to those phone lines and talk with Bob. Thanks for waiting, Bob. You're up next.
Thanks for getting me on the phone. I really appreciate your stats on those offensive and defensive rebounds for the past 5 years. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, you got to crash those boards. But do you think this team chemistry really, other than, you know, the two big guys, is there much out there that can really crash the boards? I don't think there is, really. Do you?
Well, and look, that's the other part of it, Bob, is, you know, it's not as simple because I've seen people point out, well, you just lost Jrue Holiday, which that's not entirely true. But it's not as simple as that. I mean, year by year, it's not just last year to this year. Through the years, we've seen some pretty good rebounding guards leave.
That's right. When the trade was made this year, I thought that team chemistry is just being busted up, not just with Holiday, but I don't see that team chemistry there this year with that defensive boarding action. Do you? I don't know who's going to pick it up.
It's certainly not to the level that we've seen in the past. And look, I hate to keep going back to 2021 because not there's no blueprint. But in 2020, 2021, the year the Bucks won the title ultimately, maybe not to this extent, but we were having very similar conversations up until early March, which is when the All-Star break was that season, that it took some time to develop chemistry. And that's the comp I keep going back to. And thanks for the call, Bob. I keep going back to that comp because of the amount of change we saw on that team that season. 50% of the roster was new. You brought in Bobby Portis, who was a pretty big piece of your bench. Obviously, the biggest change was bringing in Drew Holiday. Then right around the All-Star break is when you brought in P.J. Tucker. You had some other changes as well when you think about guys like D.J. Augustine that you brought in the offseason. And he lasted all of half of a season. He was part of that trade that brought in P.J. Tucker. You traded two D.J.s for a P.J. that year. There was a lot of change. 50% of your roster new. And the big thing to keep in mind with that is it's not just, well, we got to learn Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday has to learn all of his teammates. All of his teammates have to learn him as well. And I think that's what we've continued to see this year with Damian Lillard. It's gotten better, but I mentioned that two-man game, the number of actions the Bucks have run with Dame and Giannis, it actually decreased in the month of December compared to where it was in November. They've still been very effective and one of the best two-man units in terms of that two-man action and the pick and roll. They've been one of the best groups, Giannis and Dame, or duos, I should say, at running that action and scoring points per possession that they lead to off of that. But they haven't quite done it at the volume that I think a lot of us expected, and part of that is chemistry as you continue to develop that and figure out, where do I like to get the ball? Where does Giannis like to get set? And how do we figure out how to mesh those two? Same for Brooke Lopez and Damian Lillard. It's going to be a work in progress with the amount of change that this team had. The only real comp is 2021. Even John Horst himself said before this season, I've never been through this much change on a team, top to bottom. Not just personnel on the floor, off the court as well, in the front office, the coach, all of that. All the change we went through. This is the most I've experienced at an NBA level. So in that sense, it's going to take time. And I think it is fair to say we have to give this some time and continue to see things through. They haven't played a challenging schedule, but yet they're still sitting here with the second best record in the Eastern Conference. Now, depending on the results tomorrow, it could drop down to third. But you're still towards the top. It's going to get more challenging. And that's why it's imperative in this month of January, with, again, a less than challenging schedule, you continue to see that growth and that chemistry develop, because the hope is once it does get very, very challenging, and it will in March, you're starting to click. Not starting to. You have been clicking, and it's noticeable of, okay, this is where I expected this team to be. Because I do think we also need to point out the caveat of the schedule. We were having those conversations up until Christmas Day. This Bucks team was on a 7-game win streak. It was, hey, the defense suddenly, I know they're not playing the most challenging schedule, but the defense is much closer to a top 10 defense than it is a bottom 10. That conversation about Giannis and Dame, well, they're figuring it out. Giannis has been incredible. He had that stretch of games where he was not only scoring 30 and 10 with 5 assists as well, but that stretch of games where he was shooting 60% or better from the field. Damian Lillard as well, for all the talk over, man, when is this guy going to start to look like the Dame we thought we were getting? That came midway through November, and it lasted for quite a while, basically up until these two Pacers games. So we were having those conversations, but I would much rather go through these challenges now and say, well, we got to fix this and this and this, than I would in March and April. You have time now, but you have to start to see that growth. Jay Crowder, that last update to give on that is, if we just go by the 8-week timeline, Monday, this upcoming Monday, January 8th, that would be 8 weeks. So it's getting close. But again, 33-year-old guy, you're going to be asking a lot of him in the postseason. You're going to take your time. So Maybe we see Jay Crowder on the floor in 2 weeks. He was playing 30 minutes a game in those, what, nine games that he played? Close to 30 minutes in a handful of those games, 30 or more in a couple of them. It's probably not going to be 3 weeks or more until you really start to unleash him and get him back up to speed there. But it's going to help. It's not the one thing that's going to change everything. There are probably some personnel moves that are going to happen. You have to address your perimeter defense. If that's the one thing to take, that's where the rebounding issues, that's where the points in the paint, it all starts with the point of attack in your perimeter defense. That has to improve. And as much as we can see these bright spots in Marjon Beauchamp, in Andre Jackson Jr., we have seen some regression in both of those guys recently. And that's fair. That's to be expected for a second-year and rookie player. But that's why I keep coming back to, look, as much as we want to see this from these guys, it's just not realistic for a non-lottery pick player in his first or second year to be that impactful in a playoff series. Like Tyler Hero was just outside of the lottery. He made an impact, right? It's not the norm. And that's why you want to continue to develop these guys and get something from them going forward. There's some nice pieces. And Adrian Griffin has gone out of his way to say, those two guys have played great. And Andre especially, we know he's going to be a big part of this team. I don't know when that is. I don't know if it's this year or if it's next year, but he is a big part of our future. But you have to temper those expectations and realistically level set. What can we expect from a young player, from a rookie, from a second-year player who, for all intents and purposes, in the case of Marjon, is getting or would be getting his first taste of the playoffs? I know he was on the team last year, but this is it in the way that you will expect to use him this year versus last year. It's just not the norm. So you can't look at them as they're going to take a major step forward in the second half and they're going to be reliable playoff rotation guys. I hope it happens. You can't bank on that. And that's where the personnel moves come into play. The good news for the Bucks is they are going to be a second apron team. That part is not the good news. But the apron talk, which I'll just the Cliff Notes version, here's what you need to know, as I'm sure you've all heard that term, second apron. It doesn't come into play until the offseason, until day one of the offseason. So the calendar year in the league ends on June 30th. So July 1 is when that apron comes into play. What it means is what you can do over the summer and during the season next year is severely limited. This trade deadline is the Bucks' last realistic shot to make any type of move. Because once that apron penalty kicks in, you can't sign buyout players that had signed their previous contract for the mid-level or higher. You can't combine contracts, so you can't take a $9 million contract and a $3 million contract and trade that for a $12 million contract. You would have to do one for one. You can't aggregate deals. And the amount of money you can bring back, because right now you can trade for 125% of what you're sending out. You could send out $10 million and bring back 12, right? That gets limited as well. So it's going to be very challenging for the Bucks. Once we get into the offseason, this is your last crack at it where they can realistically do something. And from what we've seen defensively, you're probably going to have to do that. We'll wrap up the show, preview what's next already tomorrow night. Maybe, just maybe, we'll finally see that Victor Wembanyama versus Giannis matchup. We'll preview the matchup with the Spurs next on Bucks Talk. A frustrating night in Indianapolis as the Bucks fall to the Pacers for the fourth time in five regular season games. They are thankfully done with the Pacers in the regular season. As I think it was Justin that pointed out, it's not a great matchup for the Bucks. And you look back at when the Bucks would get up for the Cavaliers in the LeBron years and the early Giannis coming into his own, Jabari Parker and Chris Middleton years, you get that when you're a team at that level of the Pacers. This isn't to snipe and take shots at the Pacers and pat them on the head. A cute story, Pacers. But Pacers haven't been there yet, right? Pacers had a lot of frustration to take out on the Bucks. They have dominated the Pacers for the last 5 years. But it does remind me of not only that, but also when the Bucks beat the Warriors a couple of times. Not just the 24-game win streak, but I remember, what I think it was 2019, the year that the Bucks, it was either 2018 or 2019, Bud's first year or second year, when the Bucks beat the Warriors on the road in a nationally televised game, and after the game, Giannis, that's when he said, "We have arrived." It took a little bit more than that. Like, you still got to win consistently in the postseason. And that's the biggest thing, is how different the regular season is versus the postseason. Now, that works on both ways, that it's going to be more challenging for the Bucks to score as well. And as we just laid out for the last hour plus, there's still a lot to address and to clean up, especially on the defensive end. We can't keep having the same conversations 1 month from now. All the things that we've heard Adrian Griffin harp on, that we've gone over on every one of these shows too, we can't keep having the same conversation over and over. At some point, we got to get back to where we were a week ago, 10 days ago, where we weren't talking about those things quite as much. But you got to do that more consistently. You still have time to do that. And again, you're going to have some help on the way in the terms of resources, like a Jay Crowder. I would envision there is going to be something that's done to address some of the perimeter issues that this team has had. We've seen John Horst make those moves year after year. So I would assume there will be some help on the way. I don't know what level of help that is going to be. But it ultimately comes down to just executing on those margins and those little things. The low-hanging fruit that this team really excelled at grabbing. You got to get back to doing that. That's the best path for improvement for this team going forward. Tomorrow night, San Antonio, game two of a three-game road trip. So that's the other thing here is, it's not pretty right now. It has been a frustrating couple of days. The schedule does get much easier. I don't know if it gets much easier in the short term. It gets easier overall for basically most of the month of January here. So you're in San Antonio tomorrow to take on the Spurs. It is night two of a back-to-back. Spurs are not a good team, though. Then you go to Houston to take on the Rockets. The Rockets are a much better team than they were a season ago. But we've seen the Rockets fall off a little bit, 17-15 now, and they have won their last two games, but they have the Timberwolves. They're in the midst of a very tough stretch. Timberwolves, they play Friday just before they play the Bucks. After that, you come home for four games. Those four games have some challenges. It starts with the Utah Jazz. In theory, that should not be all that much of a challenge. But the big one is going to be January 11th, 1 week from tomorrow, when the Boston Celtics come to town and you face the Celtics for the second time this season. The Warriors, that weekend, they're not the Warriors of old. And then the Sacramento Kings, that'll be a challenge as well. But after that, you close out the month with Central Division games. Three with the Cavaliers, two with the Pistons, before finally the Pelicans and the Denver Nuggets. This is a chance for the Bucks to start to right a lot of those things that have not looked good with the way that the schedule breaks for this team. And again, that stretch of the four home games, it's no coincidence when we talk about this team making much larger strides and looking consistently better. That came over a stretch when they were basically at home for a month and they had an extended homestand. They had one off on the road. They went to Vegas to take on the Pacers. Then they came home for six games. And before that, they were in Chicago and in Milwaukee for a handful of games. It's no coincidence being at home and being able to do things like practice and go through more of that impacted how this team looked. So it's much different with just four, but that will help as well. But you got to start to kick it into gear here and improve some of those things that we've continued to see pop up time and time again. Bucks and the Spurs tomorrow night, 6:30 tip. 6 o'clock is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. Hopefully tomorrow, this time tomorrow, we are dissecting a win and not the first three-game losing streak since the Bucks were knocked out of the playoffs by the Miami Heat. My thanks to everybody that tuned in to the show tonight, that interacted with us as well. Matt Sossler for producing the show here, and to Alex Strofe out there in Madison as well. We will talk to you once again tomorrow night with more Bucks Talk.